On this episode of The Checkdown, we recap a crazy and chaotic Week 9 full of upsets, give our Big Boy Pants and Lil Dumper awards, and break down and make predictions for Week 10 play in the Pac-12. We then discuss the initial college football playoff rankings and how the Pac-12 fared. And lastly, the Blitz package heats up as we discuss if Christmas costumes for Halloween is appropriate, how the Warriors are on fire, and Kyle gets quizzed on the favorite Halloween candy from a handful of states. But first, here's your jam of the week. This is Michael Jackson with Thriller. Chaos in the Pac-12, Kyle. I don't know what to say. There's so many upsets. I felt confident in my predictions last week, and then this is what happens every year. There's one week where things just go haywire, and it went haywire. Bad.
This was the craziest week in the Pac-12 so far, but I do feel like both of us saw this coming.
Yeah, we just didn't know when.
Yeah, because the initial prediction was there was a few teams that if they held strong and they beat who they were supposed to beat, they had a legitimate chance to come out of the Pac-12, win the Pac-12, get to the CFP.
Yep, exactly.
But the sentiment was from both of us, I think, that what's most likely going to happen is that everybody's going to beat everybody, and we're going to be back where we started, or back where we left off last year. That's kind of where we sit, with the exception of the mustache.
Yes, very true. And Utah. The South is still wildly up in the air. Let's not forget that.
The South is up in the air. They don't have a chance at the whole thing.
But I think if we were to say the two teams that have separated themselves the most, it would be one, Washington State from the North, and two, Utah from the South for now. But still a lot of games left.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Those two teams are by far and beyond control their own destiny at this point.
Absolutely. And big week as well, because college football playoff rankings came out, which we're going to get to a little bit later. But we're going to start with a recap of last week, get into games for this week, and then we'll get into the college football playoff talk. So let's jump into the recap real quick. Utah went to UCLA and absolutely destroyed them 41-10. Zach Moss had another monster game, 26 carries, 211 yards, and 3 TDs. Oregon went down to Tucson in what was a very heartbreaking game for me to watch and got absolutely smothered. Arizona won 44-15 behind J.J. Taylor, their running back, 30 carries, 212 yards, and 2 touchdowns, as well as Shun Brown had 10 total touches for 96 yards and a TD. And then, which was probably heartbreaking for both of us to watch, Arizona State went into the Coliseum and pulled off the win, 38-35, and Jack Sears played pretty well, which we're going to get into. We're just going into the scores real quick, but obviously some of the standouts from that game, Eno Benjamin rushed for 185 yards and 2 TDs, and N'Keal Harry was just absolutely monstrous, one of the best catches I've ever seen in my entire life on the sideline there. Next up, Washington State went to Stanford, won, pulled out the win, 41-38, big performances by Gardner Minshew and Desmond Patman. Washington got beat by Cal 12-10 in what I don't understand how you cannot score an offensive touchdown and win a football game, but somehow the Golden Bears pulled that off against the Huskies, and Cal won 12-10. And then in the most epic, I think, performance of anyone as far as a lack thereof. Colorado lost to Oregon State 41-34 after being up by 28 points at one point. I cannot believe some of the things that happened this past week, this past weekend. Which one of these games sticks out to you the most?
Well, although there are three or four, or maybe even five upsets on this list, right? And attending the USC game, mm-hmm. That hurt the worst. The biggest surprise is by far the Arizona just annihilation of the Ducks.
What the hell happened?
Where in the world did that come from? So Cal is at home, fine. You can have it. They've been playing better. I've never been high on the Huskies. Whatever. Colorado has lost a couple in a row.
Yeah, but to Oregon State? The worst of the worst.
I know.
And you're up 28 points.
To be honest with you, the Colorado loss at home, the Cal loss at home, or the Colorado loss at home, the Washington loss, and the Oregon loss are just stunning.
Stunning.
Like, I have no words. I am baffled by how productive and efficient and effective the Ducks offense was all year, and how unproductive and inefficient and ineffective the Wildcats offense was all year.
And
somehow it's 44-15 Arizona. I just feel like if you play that game 11 more times, Oregon wins the other 11. But if that's the case, then it would have been close, and it wasn't.
Was there a reason you picked 11 more times they would play?
No, I just for a dozen.
That's fine. What about a baker's dozen? They play 12 more times.
No, that's too many.
Okay. I mean, obviously, so I watched the first half of that at my house, and then I watched the second half at a bar that I was at for Halloween, dressed as Conor McGregor. So I got a little Irish rage in me as I was watching the Ducks get absolutely blasted. But I think you're right. The thing
gorilla walking around the room.
Yeah, I was. I think the thing that stands out the most, though, like you said, it was a total swap in in what's been going on. Arizona, I mean, I know Khalil Tate's been hurt and out, but their offense has been sputtering a little bit, and obviously they're number six in your power rankings for a reason, because they have not looked good at all. Oregon
let me stop you for a second. They weren't good when he was in.
That's true. That's a good point.
Right? Like, for the two or three games that he started before he got injured, they weren't good.
No.
Like, it's not like they were just out there blowing people out of the water, and then he got injured, and the team fell apart. They've been bad with Khalil Tate, so continue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But then in this game in particular, Justin Herbert couldn't get going. The run game couldn't get going. Literally, they could not convert a third down. They were 3-for-16, the Ducks were, on third down. If you can't keep drives going, it doesn't matter if you have the number one NFL quarterback prospect on your team. It doesn't matter. If you don't have the ball in your hands, you can't do any damage. And that's exactly what was happening. Was Arizona's defense was getting Oregon off the field. Oregon would come out, boom, three and out. And then Khalil Tate and that offense would convert. And it was insane to watch. And very, very disheartening as well. So, I don't know. I think I'm not sure what it does to your power rankings. I know we'll get into that. But Arizona looked like what they had talked about them looking like all year, as far as maybe contending for the South. That's how good they looked this past Saturday. But the game that stands out to me the most, and I know I already said it, was Oregon State beating Colorado. And shout out to the Beavs, because that was their first away conference victory in 4 years.
No.
Yes. And they were losing by 28 points at one point. You know the little graph thing chart that they have that like gives the probability which team will win, and it's like 100% either way?
Yeah.
So basically like Colorado was like at 130% for about 2.5 quarters. They were basically at like the 97, 98, 99% win probability for like large majority of the game. And then all of a sudden that thing just turned.
We had talked about a little bit though in the first half of the season, first 4 or 5 weeks, how Oregon State's running game was impressive.
Yeah, true.
They're putting up yards and their offensive line was killing it. And Jefferson had a couple phenomenal games, like record setting Pac-12 games, 230 yards, 240 yards. But they just couldn't stop anybody.
Yep.
And so it almost seemed like if they could just somehow click on both sides of the ball at the same time,
right,
then maybe this kind of performance could happen.
Not sure defense giving up 34 points is clicking on the defensive end, but hey, if your offense scores 41, it's kind of like a Big 12 matchup, right?
That's a low scoring Big 12 matchup, yeah. So, yeah, but I guess for me, it doesn't as much surprise me because I feel like I've seen them score. And so I knew that they could score with a lot of people. They just haven't been able to stop anybody. On the Arizona side, their offense just was dismal.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't believe that they could not only put up 44, but hold Oregon to 15. But
yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, is this more of the fact that Oregon State is better than people thought and is starting to click on both sides of the ball, or is Colorado just spiraling?
It's a good question.
Lost three in a row after a start that was 5-0, and people thought, you know, they were ranked nationally at one point. Maybe this team has a chance to. Neither one of us really gave them a chance to go undefeated, but a chance to win the South, win the Pac-12 championship, make some noise. And maybe that super weak schedule that they played in the first five games of the year really was a true indication of how good they were, not necessarily how talented that team was.
No, that's true. To answer your question, I think this is more of a Colorado spiraling than it is an Oregon State being good. I think Jamar Jefferson is a phenomenal running back. I actually watched some of that game live, and he's got everything. And if they can get an offensive line in front of him, I think he could be really special. But again, LaVisca Chenault was out, and I thought he was going to be back this week, but he ended up sitting out again, and probably because they thought, hey, we're going to pull this win out no matter what, even if you don't play. And I think it came back to haunt him because he sat out, and their offense is just not the same without him, obviously. I mean, he was in the Heisman discussion. He's one of the top receivers in the country for a reason, and I think when you don't have a safety net like him out there, I think Montez looks average at best. And so to me, I think when they get him back, I think they'll get back to a little bit more of the form they had at the beginning of the year. But I think they've shown now their true colors as far as being more of that middle of the road team in the Pac-12 South.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first things I think about with Oregon State is how hard it must be to recruit where they're located.
True.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
Traditionally, and especially in the recent decade, Oregon and Washington are powerhouses in the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. especially in the state of Oregon, with how good they've been with their uniforms, with the school, with the culture, to be able to pull any even, you know, three. They're getting the leftovers, right? Yeah. I think probably even more so than UCLA from USC.
Mm-hmm. True.
Know? So,
yeah.
It's got to be tough for them to really recruit a team that's going to compete with just the two teams, you know, locally that are just so good in the North.
True. Do you think it'll ever swing back to where they're making some noise? Or do you think they're just going to be the perennial bottom of the barrel?
I mean, I think it goes in phases. Has it ever gone the other direction?
I mean, I think they were, yeah, when like Steven Jackson was there and Chad Johnson, I think they were decent.
Yeah, there's a couple years there, we've talked about this multiple times, right? But when SC would go there and lose.
Right.
Because Corvallis is such a tough place to play, but I don't know that even at that time they were a powerhouse in the North. It was just a hard place to win a game on the road.
Right.
For a couple years. So, and I think in that situation, right, with the Rogers brothers and some of the stuff that they had, they had some running backs and some skill players that outperformed their expectations out mm-hmm. of high school. And mm-hmm. so that creates, you know, a culture. And then all of a sudden you have, you know, an atmosphere of Corvallis started playing. And, you know, that combination kind of created something that was explosive for a couple years.
Fair.
Which was great to see. And so I think that can happen again, absolutely. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to predict mm-hmm. Oregon State even coming close to having the recruiting power that Oregon has, or even Washington has. Washington State has.
Yeah.
State's been pretty freaking good in the last like 4 or 5 years. They tend to get good quarterbacks in there, and they got a good coach who's well known. And
yeah.
So
it's a good point. As far as some of the other games, I think Utah did exactly what we thought they were going to do to UCLA. I thought it might be a little closer, but DTR didn't play. Wilton Spate, the grad transfer, played and didn't play particularly well. He went 20 for 40, 164 yards and two interceptions, which is not a good stat line at all.
That's rough.
I think they're a different team when DTR is in, but I think, you know, Utah is very, very good, obviously, and so that was kind of a foregone conclusion. We talked about the Oregon-Arizona game. Obviously, there isn't much to say about Cal Washington. I think Jake Browning was benched halfway through. He played terrible. You're not a huge Browning guy. You're not a huge Washington guy in general. But I just find it very, very unbelievable that a team can win a football game and not score an offensive touchdown, because that's what happened in this one. They had a pick six, a couple field goals, which is crazy to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then the last game, or the last two games, the two most important, one for personal reasons for you and two for the Pac-12 as a whole. Let's start with the Washington State win over Stanford. That was an epic game. I watched almost every snap of that. I can't remember for sure if I missed one or two here or there, but I was just on the edge of my seat the entire time because it was phenomenal. Gardner Minshew and his mustache did exactly what he's done game in and game out. It was great, and I think it was exactly what the Pac-12 needed for him to be. You know, unfortunately, it was on the Pac-12 network, which sucks for people that couldn't watch it live because there's only like 12 other people that could have the Pac-12 network. But for the people that did watch it, I think they saw exactly how good Gardner Minshew and that offense is, and how kind of fast and come right at you the defense is too, which is why I think they're ranked eighth, because they're showing it week in and week out.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, Washington State, you know, Mike Leach and that team continues to put the entire game and the offense on Minshew's shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Every single week, they say, hey, listen, you're going to throw it 50 times.
Yeah.
And if you don't perform, like, we're probably going to lose the game. And he just continues to show up and execute week after week after week. And this is the type of game, you know, coming off of the big win last week that you would think that they would lose, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to drop one here, they're going to drop one there. You know, at Stanford is tough, and then they just continue to pull it out. And I think, like you said, the defense is really the piece that's the most important, because we all know that Gardner Minshew can throw the football. We all mm-hmm. know that offense is going to put up points, but if that defense continues to stop people and just holds them to a reasonable amount of points,
yep,
Minshew's most likely going to put up 30-plus on you, and they can win. And I think, you know, even with the schedule they have remaining, They got a shot. And yep, like you just said, I mean, we haven't gotten into it yet as far as the first college football playoff rankings release of the year, but
they're in a good spot.
Number eight, respect.
Yeah, they're in a good spot for sure. Yeah, like you said, I mean, Washington State's averaging almost 41 points a game, right? So if their defense can hold anybody to a couple like non-scores or field goals, they're most likely going to win if you're putting up 41 a game. So, but in that game as well, another standout performance that I think should be noted is KJ Costello, because the Stanford running game was really not there all night. They rushed for 120 yards total, but KJ Costello went 34 for 43, 323 yards and four touchdowns, which is pretty impressive considering, I know we've talked about this before, but all of the kind of noise was around Bryce Love, and I think KJ Costello slowly over the whole season showed that he is a dominant force at the quarterback position for them. And if they could get that running game freaking up off the ground, I think they could have been a lot better this year, but so far not so good for them. 5-3, 3-2 in conference. And then the last one, and I'll let you kind of take over, cause I know you were there. Arizona State pulling out the win over USC 38-35.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough, right? JT's out with concussion symptoms. He couldn't pass concussion protocol. Fink had a couple fractured or broken ribs, so he couldn't go. So Jack Sears, the third-string quarterback, had to start. Now, he didn't really play that bad, and to be honest with you, you know, especially being at the game, he was not the reason that the team lost. Mm-hmm. I think that the defense, although on the field more than they would like to be, they gave up a lot of points.
Mm-hmm.
And they've given up a lot of points recently. There's been probably two, maybe three defensive performances this year that I thought, man, this defense is swarming. For example, the Colorado game, now, you know, kind of looks like, well, maybe Colorado just isn't that good, but on the Colorado game, USC's defense seemed to be in the backfield every single play, and I thought maybe that was the start of something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that was necessarily the case. I think just Colorado's offense was just a little overrated. In this game, the defense gave up too many points, and then that special teams punt return to the real deal in the Keel was a killer.
Yeah.
And then that's if you're going to put your third string quarterback out there, you need your defense to just be smart. Don't give up a ton of points. Don't do anything stupid. Turnovers are super key, and they were loose in a couple areas and I think cost them the loss. It's a close game, and I think luckily for at least Clay Helton, you know, they had their third string quarterback in.
Yeah.
And I think that down the stretch, you know, they better win the rest of these games. You know, Notre Dame aside, because Notre Dame's looking really stinking good right now.
Yeah.
If he wants to keep his job.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think I thought Jack Sears actually played really well. In the first half, I think he only attempted like four or five passes because I think they were so worried. And I think he had kind of some happy feet in the pocket and maybe took off running a little early. But he really settled down in the second half. And he went, you know, 20 for 28, 235 yards and two touchdowns, which is a pretty good game. And he should have had another 50-yard bomb to Tyler Vaughns. But that defensive back kind of got his hand in there. I still thought Vaughns could have maybe kind of cradled it in, but that could have been another completion touchdown, more yards for him as well. I think the other thing that hurt USC was they had basically their three studs, one at every level on the defense out. Obviously, Porter Gustin's done for the year. Cam Smith was out again with his hamstring, and then Marvell Tell also sat out. So to have each one of your top three defensive guys, one at each level, out, I think is extremely detrimental, obviously, and I think it showed this week when you don't have your leaders on the field and you're relying on a bunch of young guys and you're going up against a relatively good offense. I mean, Manny Wilkins is he's good. He was pretty efficient in this game. He didn't play great, but he also sat out a couple series because he got hurt. And then Eno Benjamin's one of the better running backs in the conference, and you know, N'Keal Harry is obviously one of the best wide receivers in the country. So I think you have a very good offense on the Arizona State side, and they went up against a defense that was pretty depleted. And then obviously your third string quarterback does not help at all. And so those were the reasons I picked Arizona State to upset USC. And I think eventually all those kind of things showed themselves at some point during the game. But it was still very close, and I think that's a great sign for USC to be down all those guys and still keep it close against the Sun Devils.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't overly disappointed, you know, given the injuries and who we had starting on the field. Really, the biggest thing I took away was how much of a freak N'Keal Harry is.
Oh, my goodness.
Watching that kid play in person, he is so big and strong and fast.
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys, like, he's one of those Megatron, Julio type dudes that is so incredibly athletic and fast for his size. I mean, the guy's a freak. I mean, that punt return, those guys were on special teams for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, they're very fast guys. Nobody could catch them.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, that guy's next level ready.
Well, and that's how you know, too, that he's got that next level talent, because he took a punt on the 8-yard line, ran backwards, basically almost to his own end zone, and then cut it up, and then returned it 92 yards for a touchdown. Like, that takes some serious huevos rancheros to do that, because that's basically what coaches tell you never to do. You put your heels on the 10-yard line. If the punt looks like it's going over your head, you let it go, and hopefully it bounces in the end zone. Anywhere else, you fair catch it and go. And he ran backwards, caught it at the 8, circled back around almost all the way into the end zone and took off. I mean, that's some serious confidence.
And he's not Tyreek Hill.
Right,
he's not 195 pounds. He has 225, 230. Like, that is just... Yeah, look out for him.
Yeah, for sure. So... that's actually a good segue. Let's get into our Big Boy Pants Awards for this week, because I'll start, and he is one of mine for that simple reason that he was just all over the field. N'Keal Harry ended with four catches for 95 yards and a touchdown, and then obviously the 92-yard punt return for a TD. I think he showed up huge this week, which he needed to do, because Arizona State has also been on a bit of a skid, so it was good to see him get that. And then
this is for both of them, deserve Big Boy Pants Awards.
Agreed. Great call on your part. Yeah, I mean, you know, we have our biases, obviously, but we're also sensible and reasonable humans, and especially Pac-12 commentators, and I can appreciate when someone has a good game, even if it's against my Ducks, so that's okay. I hate to admit it, but it's okay. let's get into the Little Dumper Award. This should be a lot of fun, because there are definitely some huge possibilities for some Little Dumper Awards. I'll let you go first, so why don't you hit us with your first Little Dumper?
I think you probably have this guy, even though you don't want to, because there are two or three superstars in the Pac-12 that just were dumpers this week.
Yes.
Right? And I think the biggest one is Justin Herbert.
No, no, I don't have him, but I understand why you do.
Oregon Ducks, Justin Herbert, 50% completion percentage for the game. He only completed half of his passes. Not impressive. One interception. They absolutely got destroyed. They couldn't move the football. If you're going to be the guy that's going to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft coming up, and the run game isn't moving, you better just Aaron Rodgers that thing and get out there and just throw a bunch of times and win the football game.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like, well, at least in this game, that he could do it.
Mm-hmm.
The running game's not working. Start chucking the ball around the yard. And that wasn't working for Justin Herbert. He only completed half his passes. And a pretty devastating loss for the Ducks. So it's mm-hmm. got to go to him.
Fair enough. I don't have him. Simply out of pride. I know I just said I'm a sensible man, but I would not do that to Justin Herbert. So there goes my bias right there. But anyways, my little dumper award, and I think it's hard to overlook, but I just went with the whole Colorado team. I couldn't pick anyone in particular, but I just don't. You just Colorado buffs. I'm sorry, you are one of the little dumper awards this week. 28 points. They were up. Let the Beavs come back. Couldn't stop the run. You know, they scored a lot of points, but it wasn't pretty per se. And I just you can't do that to the worst team in the conference. And so for that reason, the Colorado Buffs get my little dumper award this week. But there were a lot of options. There were multiple people and full teams that could have won for sure. I mean, we didn't even dive into the Washington one. I thought you were going to take Jake Browning, to be honest, because he got benched like in the third quarter. Insane.
He was my number two.
Okay, I was.
I had to put Justin Herbert on just because I had the opportunity.
That's fair. Fair enough. Yeah, we haven't had. He hasn't had that opportunity all year, to be honest. This is his first kind of down game. But yeah. Anyways, so a lot of little dumpers this week. But let's get into, you know, with kind of a crazy week, there's going to be some shakeup in your power rankings. So why don't you run through your North and South power rankings?
Yeah. So this is interesting because I could have gone. Going into this, I thought there's so many upsets that I'm basically going to start pulling names out of a hat, right, for the North and the South.
Right.
Let's assume, first off, that the Cougars in the North and the Utes in the South are one, and then everything else is just a total toss-up. But then I was looking at the records, the performances, and I didn't feel like changing a whole bunch. And think about this stat, right? From my previous rankings, 2 through 4 – in each division lost.
Mm.
So I had Washington State mm-hmm. and Utah staying on top, and then 2 through 4 in each all lost.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what do I do with 2 through 4? Does 5 through 6 in each division start to move up? So with that said, here's where I ended up.
Okay.
In the North, started with number 6, still of Oregon State.
Okay, fair.
2-6 overall, 1-4 in conference. Even though they had a big win, their record still is not fantastic. And then the teams above them, I just don't think that if you put them head-to-head on a neutral site, which is my mm-hmm. baseline, that they would win, right? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Number 5 is Cal. Cal's been playing a lot better. Cal just beat Washington. They were at home. And same reasoning, really, is I just don't think if you put them on a neutral site, they beat 2 through 4 in the North Division. So number 5 and number 6 stay where they're at. Number 4 is Oregon, dropping from 3 down to 4. I had to at least drop them a spot. They completely dropped the ball against Arizona, got smashed. I had half a mind to put them down to 5, but I still think they're a more talented football team. So I left them at 4.
You're a real Bryson DeChambeau this week. You know that? Go ahead.
They were 1 at one point, too.
It's true.
Number 3, the Huskies. Washington, coming down from 2 to 3. Obviously, they lost that game against Cal. However, they were on the road. Browning played terrible. I think that they have to at least drop a spot for the loss that they had. And then what that means is I have Stanford at number 2.
Mm.
5-3 overall, 3-2 in conference. I had to pick one of the 3 teams that lost below Washington State up at number 2.
Right.
And I think that Stanford's win was the least egregious of the group.
Yeah, and they played Washington State tight. They actually had chances to win that game for sure. So makes sense.
They could have won the game. They played the best team
right.
in the conference, mm-hmm. the best team in the division. And for that reason, they're up to number 2, jumping up from 4. So a big jump from Stanford.
Okay, fair.
And then number 1, Washington State, 7-1 overall, 4-1 in conference. To think that their only losses against the Trojans, the way that Trojans have been playing lately, is just a little ridiculous, to be honest with you.
True.
And it would probably be better for the conference if USC would have lost that game.
Yeah, it's a good point.
But
so before you get to the South, I need to air this on the podcast. How do you not have Oregon above Washington? They won the head-to-head. And Oregon beat Cal, and Cal beat Washington.
Oregon beat Cal, which is why they're above them.
And Oregon beat Washington.
Oregon beat Washington in overtime.
They still won. Real wins are better than hypothetical wins, and real wins always play out in the favor of the team that actually wins.
True, but that game was close, and I feel like Washington, although underwhelming, is pretty much trending on a flat line, whereas Oregon is trending downwards.
Mm-mm.
Yes, they just got absolutely smoke-showed by the worst team in the South. And you know it. You have to get dinged for that.
But here's my thing. I think that Arizona was not playing well, but they're not the worst team in the South. They were projected to maybe win the South at the beginning of the year and are on that trajectory up. Even with Rhett Rodriguez, their third-string quarterback, in last game, they played pretty well.
They've been bad most of the year.
Most of the year they've been bad, yes.
Most of the year they've been bad, and Justin Herbert is supposed to be the number one pick in the NFL draft. And they got crushed.
I just think the head-to-head has to mean something.
It does, but when you get to this point in the season and everybody's played everybody, there's a million scenarios of why this person tied that. But it's like, it can only mean so much, and I think two teams are even, the head-to-head matters. But I feel like Oregon's loss was bad. Well, two losses in a row.
Yeah, but one was to Washington State.
So, two losses in a row. They're trending down.
You move Stanford up for losing a close one to Washington State, and Oregon just lost to Washington State. You're just doing this to ruffle my feathers, and my feathers are freaking ruffled, all right?
That's just a byproduct of the rankings.
Fair. Okay? Fair. All right, let's go to the South.
In the South, starting with 6, ASU. I know they just beat USC, but USC had a third-string quarterback, ton of defensive players out, as we just talked about. I don't think it was a very impressive win. Yes, N'Keal Harry is impressive. He's an NFL wide receiver, but that team is not great. They just beat a really beat-up team in the Coliseum, pretty much because they had that punt return, and that wasn't even fucking. And then also the teams above them are trending upwards, so it was hard to have them make that jump, right? So I actually dropped Arizona State from 5 to 6 with a win.
I don't understand you.
You don't have to.
You're a reasonable man, and this is not reason.
My wife doesn't either. Don't worry about it. Number 5, UCLA, dropping down from number 4 with the loss to Utah, although much predicted.
Mm-hmm.
They are 2-6 overall, 2-3 in conference, which is not a good record. However, I feel like with DTR, if he plays, they are trending upwards. They got a lot more talent. They're going in the right direction. And I feel like, I think they're going to give USC a win for them already because they play in the Rose Bowl. And I think they're headed on the right path. So I feel like they deserve to be above the Sun Devils at this point. I got Arizona at 4, coming up from 6. Big jump, 2 spots. Wow. The Wildcats, huge win over the Ducks. You cannot underrate a 44-15 win against a team that had a chance to go to the college football playoff. You just can't.
You can't. Your criteria is flawed, but go ahead.
Listen, Tony, if we wanted to know the standings of the North and the South, you could Google it.
Yeah, but my...
This is power rankings. It's different. It's about who's the best right now.
Yeah, but how do you keep a team at number 2, which is what you're going to do with USC, when they just lost to the worst team in your South?
A couple reasons.
You can't just... They're trending way down. Using your language, they're like one of the worst trends right now.
Think about this, right?
If that's your case... Well, the problem is that everybody in the South is trending down. So that is a problem.
So that's the thing, right? USC, Colorado, both are trending down. Arizona has been terrible, wins one upset game. UCLA has been terrible, won a couple decent games. And Arizona State has been terrible all year. So what am I supposed to do? Like, one of those teams is better than the other. And so if you look at a couple things, right, I have Colorado with 3. Now, mm-hmm. They've lost 3 in a row.
And they just lost to Oregon State.
They just lost to Oregon State. However, they have won some decent football games this season. And they've shown to have some talent. And one bad loss, or even 2 bad losses, starts to knock you down pegs, but it can't knock you from 2 to 6. in my opinion. And then USC
Fair.
Lost to Arizona State. However, defense is in shambles. They have their third string quarterback. That's really not the team that, you know, we saw the first 4 weeks of the
season. Yeah, but it can't be hypothetical. You have to go with who you have right now showing up on the field on a Saturday. And if that's who USC has, they're not the second best team in the South.
So next week, if I had USC and Arizona on a neutral field, who do you take?
Well, who's playing? Do they have Marvell? Do they have Marvell Tell, or do they have Marvell Tell, Cam Smith back, or do they not?
No, they have the they have the players that are scheduled to play in this upcoming week, which is not Porter, but it is JT, and it's probably Cam Smith. So who wins? Like, who's better right now, USC or Arizona?
I mean, I think if I were to, well, I mean, that is predicated on who is healthy and who is not. I think if those three guys are out, Arizona could beat them easily. Just like Arizona State did.
But those three guys aren't going to be out this upcoming week. JT Daniels almost played.
True. I don't know. He's even a little iffy.
See, it's not that easy, is it? Because if it was that easy, you would have said, oh, well, that's easy. It would be.
But I don't. My point is, I don't know how you can make so many shifts for teams that won or lost to bad teams and then be like, well, that's not what USC actually is, so I'm just going to go on a hypothetical for them. They're bad right now, and you just don't want to admit it.
They are bad right now. But so is Colorado, so is Arizona, so is UCLA, and so is Arizona State. The whole freaking South is crap.
But Arizona beat them. That's got to mean something.
Arizona beat who?
USC or Arizona State. Beat USC.
Oh. Yeah, but they still suck. They have one good player.
True. Fair. All right, so then Utah's your number one.
If you think about it, another way that I look at it would be, you know, what do I think the final standings are going to look like based on how these teams are trending?
Yeah.
I think that USC ends up in the top two or three. So does Colorado. And I still think that UCLA and Arizona State end up in five or six.
Fair.
So, yeah, Utah, number one, 6-2, 4-2 in conference. They were one last week. They're one this week. Washington State and Utah just control their own destiny. They're the two best teams in the Pac-12 right now. We really thought that the three best teams in the Pac-12, I think we even wrote an article about it, are from the North. And I don't necessarily think that's the case.
No,
anymore.
I don't. I agree. I think you're right. I think Utah's got to be in that conversation with the top three.
So, I mean, Stanford, Washington, and Oregon, man, rough 2 or 3 weeks.
I can't tell who's good and who's not good anymore is the problem, right? Like, since we've started this podcast, I've taken a lot of interest in, like, really researching and watching the games and trying to get a good feel. And then you have a weekend like this happen, or even a couple games from last weekend, and I just, like, don't know what I'm doing anymore. I feel like I'm just, like, pulling names out of a hat because everyone is so bunched together except for maybe Washington State and Utah, who have separated a little bit.
Yeah, that's it. That's
which is
the
weird.
Only thing I feel comfortable with right now.
And like, and then my biases tell me, like, no, like, Washington started the year ranked number 8 or 9 in the country. Like, they should be good, but then they get beat by Cal, and Cal doesn't even score an offensive touchdown. Like, I don't know how that works. It's frustrating because I want to know, and I want to, like, be able to predict well, and it's just not fun when you don't know how to do that.
It's bad for the conference, too.
It's very bad, which we'll get into when we talk about the college football playoff rankings. Wow. But, okay, thank you for those rankings, as bad as they were. I appreciate your effort. So let's get into the Week 10 matchups. We got some big ones here, and maybe we'll provide a little bit of clarity for us moving forward, because we have some of those kind of middle teams playing against each other.
Probably not, but let's give it a shot.
Good point. So, let's start Colorado at Arizona. Who do you like in that one?
I'm going with the Wildcats.
Ooh, okay.
I just feel like Colorado is just a dumpster fire the last 3 weeks. They've just been beat up and playing terrible, and everything's going in the wrong direction. It's at Arizona and Tucson, and I don't like the direction that the Buffs are heading, so I'm going with Arizona.
Okay. I'm going on the opposite end. Colorado's getting Chenault back this week, from what the reports say, so that should make a huge difference, and I think this is their bounce-back game. I don't think you lose like that to Oregon State and come out flat the next week, so I'm going Colorado. Wow, starting off on the opposite foot. That's good news for us, because usually we're right down the same street. I don't know why I said that was not a good analogy.
Yeah, usually we're on the same train. I just
took a different one. Oh, good. Okay. Let's do Utah at Arizona State.
Utah, all the way, even on the road. Arizona State's, you know, overrated. You know, they beat a beat-up USC team, but Utah's just on fire. They're rolling. I think they see the light at the end of the tunnel and for the Pac-12 South, and they just know that they need to win, you know, these last two or three conference games to really give themselves a chance at the Pac-12 championship.
Agreed.
And, you know, at least a New Year's Six Bowl.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
you know, I think they keep that train going.
I agree. I think that Utah has an elite defense, not just for the Pac-12 standards, but literally around the nation. I think they're very, very good compared to other defenses from other conferences. And so, you know, they're only giving up 16.8 points per game right now, which is huge as far as limiting teams offensively. So I'm going with Utah as well because of their defense, but also because there has been a lot of great offensive play from Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss the last couple of weeks, and if they could just continue to do what they do, they'll beat ASU. Let's move on to UCLA at Oregon.
Get their feelings hurt multiple times in a row, multiple weeks in a row. So I didn't go that direction with the Colorado-Arizona game, but, you know, I think Justin Herbert and that offense is going to be pissed.
Yeah, I do too. So, and the scary thing is that Herbert was in concussion protocol, but they think he's going to be back.
What about DTR? Is he long-term hurt or just short-term hurt?
He's week to week, but he like could barely throw in
warm-ups. That's helpful.
Yeah, seriously. He could barely throw in warm-ups before last game. He like had a little thing on his shoulder and he could like barely raise it above. He was like side-arming it, so not sure.
Oregon's backup quarterback?
It's a great question. Not sure off the top of my head.
Some hippie?
Yes. Oh, man. Anywho, I still think even without Herbert, though, that Oregon should beat UCLA.
Yeah, I think they just run the crap out of the ball.
Yeah.
If that's the case.
Just keep handing it off to Dye and Verdell and just run that baby out and then run some play action off of it. So, okay, so we're both going Oregon there. What about USC at Oregon State?
I'm going to USC, and I'm picking them because I think JT comes back. Clay Helton also took over play calling responsibilities this week and fired his offensive line coach.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I think he's starting to see the writing on the wall that he needs to take a little more responsibility for the way this offense functions.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been an offensive coordinator before his head coaching tenure for years and years.
Right? Yeah.
So he is an offensive head coach by nature. He needs to be the one making the decisions, making the play calls, you know, taking responsibility for the way that offense runs. And this is the first week that he does that. I think it's the same week he gets JT back, hopefully Cameron Smith back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's a bounce back win for USC. Plus, I feel like the Oregon State win last week was a little bit more of a result of Colorado spiraling, like you said, than Oregon State really being that good.
Yeah.
So I'm going with the Trojans.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fair point. I'm going with USC as well for a lot of the same reasons that you just mentioned. I think it's huge that Clay Helton came out and did that. He's always like a, we'll evaluate things at the end of the year sort of guy, but no, I think he's feeling a lot of the pressure and he realized, hey, I got to kind of grab this thing by the horns and I got to take control, which I think is good. And I think, you know, puts a lot more pressure on him, but it also maybe will work out in his favor as far as if they can turn things around and win out the rest of this year. And he's at the helm of a lot of the things. I think he can maybe gain some of that respect back from the fan base that he's lost, which is kind of the underperformance this year so far. But so we're both with USC. Oh, this is a good one. Stanford at Washington.
Go with Washington.
Ooh.
Going with my boy, Jake Brown. I don't like them, but I think that they bounce back. I think they're at home. It's in Seattle. You know, the loss to Cal is a tough one. And like I said, I'm a big fan of bounce back games. I think that Stanford is good but not great. And I do think that Jake Browning is going to have a lot to prove. He's always had a lot to prove with the size and just kind of the way he plays quarterback without the hugest arm in the world. So I think,
right,
you know, this is actually a really tough one because Stanford played really well against Washington State last week.
Yeah.
But I just think that home field advantage is the deciding factor
yeah.
on this one.
No, I think you're right. And this one I spent a lot of time on just looking at stuff because it's so hard to tell. Obviously, Washington has a good defense, and I think that has kept them in a lot of games, and then offense has done enough to win. Oh, man. I'm going to go Stanford.
Whoa,
yeah.
Look at you.
And that's the reason I had to think about it for so long was because my prediction was USC versus Washington in the Pac-12 championship, and that's still within reach. And now that I'm making this prediction, that will no longer be in reach. But I also just feel like Stanford, as bad of a season as they've had, when they put it all together, they can be very good. And I think at some point it's going to click, and I am hoping that it's this weekend. So I'm going Stanford.
All right. I like it.
Yeah. And then last, but certainly not least, Cal at Washington State.
I think this is going to be closer than people think.
Ooh.
And the reason I say that is because Washington State has Cal, and then they have Colorado, mm-hmm. at Colorado, which at 5 weeks ago seemed like a nightmare
right.
game, which now seems not to be that difficult
mm-hmm.
For the Apple Cup. And so one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, is it a possible trap game scenario? And I'm starting to think that possibly now, hopefully not,
yeah.
but possibly this team starts to look past these mediocre games and look towards that matchup against Washington's going to give them, you know, a surefire look at the Pac-12 championship game. And Cal has been playing well.
Yeah.
Obviously, right? Like they absolutely thumped UCLA.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oregon State. Thumped Oregon State, thumped Washington, or beat Washington 12-10. The team's playing good. Garbers is playing good.
Yeah.
And I don't think people give them enough credit. So I think it's going to be close, but I do think that Washington State wins because it's in Pullman.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think home field advantage is big here as well, and I think Washington State continues to roll. But I do think Cal has a sneaky good defense. They're great in the red zone. They're great in pass defense. So I think, you know, like you said, I think it may be a little bit closer than people think. And I think Washington State also has a lot of hype around them right now, which sometimes can be a bad thing for teams. But I still think Washington State pulls it out. So
the good news is the mustache blocks all the noise. Like all of the hype and all that stuff that gets into the way of playing good football, the mustache bounces right off.
Right. Yep. Minshew can't even hear it. He doesn't even know that yeah. it's happening. But okay, so we're different in a couple, mostly the same, but we'll see. See what happens. Okay. Let's move on because in biggest news in college football, obviously the initial college football playoff rankings came out. And I'm going to run through kind of what the criteria was as far as right now, what they're going to use moving forward as well. So the criteria used to rank the teams were, one, if they had won a conference championship, which no one has yet, but that is going to be used in consideration. And then strength of schedule, head-to-head competition, outcomes of common opponents, and then other relevant factors, which I'm not really sure what that means, but that's just kind of a nice broad way of saying if they just think a team's better than someone else, in my opinion. But
it's like discretionary in your monthly bonus at work. Like, oh, thanks. So I have no idea what you're paying me for.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So to start, the top four: Alabama, Clemson, LSU, and Notre Dame. Michigan and Oklahoma sitting right on the edge, as well as Georgia. Right outside, they're the next three. Is that the right order?
Yeah, Michigan 5, Georgia 6, Oklahoma yeah, 7.
And then Washington State.
Number 8.
Yep, so the top ranked Pac-12 team, Washington State at number 8, which I think is huge for them. I think, for me, I think it shows great respect for the Cougs. I mean, they don't have a great preseason schedule, which may come back to hurt them, but that's a great place to be moving forward, because if they win out, they're going to be one of those teams that can really be in discussion for one of that three or four seed if they have some things happen above them.
Yeah, I mean, and the most interesting thing to me is that, well, LSU jumping up to three from four in the AP poll is interesting. I think the thing to realize the most is that Alabama, LSU, and Georgia are all going to end up playing each other. And what's most likely going to happen is that Alabama is going to beat LSU in the regular season and then Georgia in the SEC championship game. And then only one of them is going to have less than two losses. So only one team comes out of the SEC. So if you take those two teams out, then it gets really tricky for that fourth spot.
Right. And what would be best case scenario for the Pac-12 is if Alabama beats LSU this weekend, because Alabama plays LSU on Saturday. If LSU wins that game, that's when the discussion of two SEC teams sneaking in could really cause some trouble for the other conferences.
Yeah, that's what we don't want. We want Alabama to just roll the SEC, knock everybody else out, so only one team gets out. Let's say Clemson gets in because the ACC is terrible. I don't know why anybody gives them credit because holy crap, that conference is bad. Well, it's actually evident this year because there's no other ACC teams in the ranking.
They're like all in the bottom
Yeah,
seven.
they're terrible. Well, who is? Was there anybody in here?
Is it
ACC, NC State,
yeah.
BC,
BC.
21 and 22. Jeez. Anyway, I think Notre Dame gets in. I think Notre Dame looks really good, and their schedule is not horribly hard coming down the stretch. So, but then that leaves at number four spot. It's either a one-loss Big Ten champ, it's a one-loss Big 12 champ, it's a one-loss Washington State Pac-12 champ. One of those three's got to get in, and really there's six teams, five conference champions, and then one at large in Notre Dame trying to get into four spots, which is great for the CFP because if that really does come down to that and you have some two or three one-loss conference champs fighting for one spot, that opens a conversation wide open for the 18 playoff.
So, yes, I agree. What is hurting the Pac-12 right now is that the only other team ranked is Utah at 15.
No,
No,
15's good. 15's a jump up.
right, and they already beat Utah, which is great. But the Pac-12 had no one in the 16 to 25 spot, which hurts because that means that they're looking for another big win on Washington State's resume, hopefully, if they continue to win out. But when you don't have Stanford in the top 25 yet, you don't have Oregon in the top 25 yet, and you don't have Washington in the top 25 yet, those are three teams that if one of them would have been in this initial ranking, would have made Washington State look better. But unfortunately, that's not how it played out. And so to not have, and I know it's at the bottom of the top 25 ranking, but to not have any Pac-12 teams there makes the conference as a whole look weaker. And it really puts a lot of pressure now on Washington State to win out because that's the only way they'll even be in the discussion. And even if they do win out, things could be slim because of how weak their non-conference schedule was, which sucks.
I think they're the sixth team on that six-team totem pole I just talked about, right? I think if Michigan wins out, wins the Big Ten with one loss, or if Oklahoma wins the Big 12 with one loss, I think they're ahead of Washington State based on two things, right? Reputation as a whole. Oklahoma's gotten to the CFP. They fought against Georgia in that semifinal game. Kyler Murray's a Heisman Trophy candidate. And then Michigan is Michigan, and everybody wants to see Michigan there.
Yeah,
So
it's a good point.
I think that they need chaos to happen
Yeah.
realistically, and they need Michigan and Oklahoma to lose another game and to have basically those two conferences have nobody but two lost teams, and
Exactly.
then by default, Washington State squeezes into that fourth
Yep.
spot.
And not only that, they need, like we already talked about, they need Alabama to win out, so there's no discussion of two SEC teams going. And they need Notre Dame to lose, preferably to USC if possible, because then
I
that
don't
would
think that
help.
matters. Because I even think a one-loss Notre Dame team gets in.
Really? I don't think they do.
You don't think a one-loss Notre Dame team gets
I
in?
mean, the top criteria that they use is if you won your conference.
Their schedule's nasty, though.
But not anymore. If you look at who they've played now, there's only a couple that they're panned out to be what, like, good. Michigan, Stanford is not in the top 25 anymore.
That's true.
Virginia Tech, maybe. Florida State looks bad. Syracuse is ranked 19th right now, and USC is not ranked. So, I mean, the schedule at the beginning of the year, I think, looked a lot better than it does now. But they do have, obviously, that marquee victory that first week against Michigan, which is huge. So
maybe that's a long shot, but maybe.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see. This is why it's so fun, because we can always debate and we don't have to actually know any of the answers.
I love it.
Yeah. So it's good. The initial, you know, rankings, some other fun facts that I found about the rankings, which is, I think, good just for perspective, because everybody kind of loses their collective minds right now when the first rankings come out and everybody's upset unless they're in the top four. But I think good things to remember. Number one, fun fact number one, only three undefeated teams have made the college football playoff over the 4 years, and none of them won the title. Zero teams ranked in that third spot in the initial ranking have ever made the Final Four. So LSU is not in the primetime spot as of right now. And the last fun fact, two teams outside the top 10 of the initial rankings have creeped into the Final Four. That was Ohio State was ranked 16th in 2014, and Oklahoma was ranked 15th in 2015. And interestingly enough, that was the year Ohio State actually went on to win when they were ranked outside the top 10 and made it all the way into the Final Four. So a lot of shakeup can still happen. I don't think people should get too crazy too soon. I think as the next couple weeks play out, it'll become clearer and clearer.
I think another fact is no two-loss team has ever gotten in, right?
No, didn't. I don't know. That's a good question. No, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, because I think a couple one-loss non-conference champs have gotten in. I think Alabama and Ohio State have gotten in with that.
Right.
With that weird, well, our division's, you know, strong, but we didn't go to the championship, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think a two-loss team's ever gotten in.
That's true. You're right. No two-loss team has ever gotten in.
Which is great. It's actually nice to know, because that basically, there's your benchmark. If your team loses two games, that's it.
Yeah, good point. Unless there's just a lot of chaos all over the country and there's only like one or two teams that only have one loss. Right?
Think about this for a second. Imagine they expand to eight. How much more chaos ensues? Like, think about the rankings right now.
I know.
Right? Washington State, Oklahoma, Georgia, Michigan, Notre Dame, LSU, Clemson, Alabama, they're all in.
True.
Right? And then you're talking about Kentucky, Ohio State, Florida, maybe a UCF. That's undefeated, sneaking in. Like, it gets really fun and interesting if you expand that. Even if you expand to six and give the first two teams byes, mm-hmm. I don't know, but just blow it up a little bit. And I think all of a sudden that conversation becomes way more intriguing.
Well, yeah, and I think, personally, I feel like having the Power 5 conference championships mean something is really good for the fan bases out there, because like for the Pac-12, basically 5 weeks into the season, people were like, well, nobody's making the playoffs, so screw this, like all we could do now is go for a conference championship. Like, if the conference championship means an automatic bid into the playoffs, I think fan bases stay engaged longer, which is better for football as a whole.
Agreed, but I think the one thing people worry about, which is part of the discussion, was if an Alabama is 10-0 and they know that they're number one and the top 8 teams get in, like, what's their incentive to beat LSU in week 11?
The conference.
Right? They're like, even if we lose this game, is seeding enough to keep those games as uber interesting as they are right now? Because right now, even the way the 4-team playoff sits, every single game means everything.
But it should, in my opinion. The way they could incentivize it is that either top two teams get a bye or home field advantage. The first round of the playoffs is actually played on your campus.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Then that way you actually have a home game, which is a huge deal at the college football level, and I think that could incentivize people to not just kind of cash it in towards the end of the year. But
good point.
But also there is always, I mean, Oregon State can come back and beat Colorado for Pete's sake. If a team wants to sit out their starters because they think they're going to make it and they happen to lose, that's a risk that I just wouldn't be willing to take.
True.
You know, so, but anyways,
there for a second.
Anyways, so initial rankings out. We're going to keep an eye on it. We'll kind of keep updating as the year goes on, but definitely interesting stuff. Let's move in. Is there anything else you want to add about college football before we get into the Blitz package?
No, awesome stuff.
Yeah.
This is just the meat of the schedule, man.
Yeah.
This is when it gets, the second this first CFP ranking comes out is when it gets really, really fun.
Yep. And it shows what the committee values.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's Like you look at UCF, who's undefeated and has been undefeated all last year, and they're ranked 12th, which is kind of a hard place to be. Like we said, only two teams outside the top 10 have ever made it into the Final Four. So they got some work to do, and they need some help up top as well. And I think they're another hot topic discussion, obviously, because they're not in the Power Five, but they have notoriously been very good over the last 2.5-3 years. And so who knows? Maybe they'll be one of the first teams, or one of the first team from a non-Power Five conference to get in.
Maybe. You never know.
You never know. You just never know. Okay, let's move on to the Blitz package. I've got some Halloween-themed ones for you because tomorrow is Halloween, and I think it's important for us to be aware of what's going on nationally outside of college football.
Okay. Way to set the mood for
that. Yeah. So I want to start because when I went out last weekend dressed as Conor McGregor, when I was out, I saw multiple people, not only in person, but then also on social media, dressed up as like Santa Claus or The Who's, like Cindy Lou Who, or like an elf. And I just find that to be wrong. I feel like my question is, I'll let you answer.
I was going to say, wait a second.
Yeah, so should Christmas costumes come into play for Halloween?
No.
Right. That was exactly my thought.
Yeah. You can't do that. You're mixing holidays.
Like, if you're...
Nobody wears an American flag tank top and board shorts to Halloween party. That's for 4th of July.
And my thing is, too, like, if you're, like, a bloody Santa or some sort of, like, you know...
Don't do that either.
Okay, yeah. But I just mean, like, if you're a little creepier of something, like, you know, like, you're Christmas-themed, but it's, like, bloodier or gorier, like, what Halloween is supposed to be, I can understand that. But just to wear a Santa Claus outfit out, it seems counterintuitive to me.
It's lazy.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad we're on the same page, because I was afraid to ask that question, because I thought you'd be like, people can wear whatever they want.
No, I'm a big Christmas guy. That's against the rules.
Yeah, and I feel like it's kind of sacrilege, right? Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Well, good. I'm glad we're on the same page there. So, that was my question. Did you dress up, or are you going to dress up?
Yeah, I'm going to be a farmer.
Oh.
Because Cade is a horse, and Colt is a... another farm animal, a chicken, his little chicken costume. And then Steph is a cow, so she's obviously super pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So she made that... She made the homemade costume, and she used actual baby bottle nipples for the cow udders on her pregnant belly, and it's hilarious. So she's going to be the star of the show.
Okay.
But our kids look good, too.
Yeah. Good. You're just kind of there.
Yeah. I asked her the other day. I was like, so did you get my costume? What am I wearing? She's like, you can wear whatever you want. I'm like, wow. So I'm definitely the least support of this group.
You should go as Santa Claus.
Yeah, I know. I might just do that now, you know? Just piss everybody off.
Yeah. All right. What do you got for me?
All right, so if you didn't know, basketball started.
I heard that.
Yeah, it's in full swing. The other night, I think last night, Klay Thompson scored 52 points.
Jeez.
In 27 minutes, 27 minutes of play. He had 14 threes in the game, which is the all-time record for three-pointers in a game.
Wow.
History of basketball, right? Mm-hmm. So, there are... Let's see here. Wow. There's a lot of players with 10 threes in a game, but there are a handful of players, let's say 6 or 8, on the list of the top 20 players. So, guys that have had 10 three-pointers in a game or more.
Mm-hmm.
So with three strikes, you know, how many of those guys can you name?
Oh, man. Okay. Well, okay. So I'm going to say Klay Thompson.
Well, yeah, he's number one.
Okay. Steph Curry.
Yep. He has 13.
Okay. Kobe Bryant.
Okay. He has one game with 12.
Shoot. This is where
there's one other guy with 12 that's a tough one. And then there's a handful with 11.
I don't know. This is gonna be, well, I'm gonna say like Reggie Miller.
No.
Really?
No Reggie Miller.
So that's one strike. Oh, do you want me to bring out the...
Yeah, do that. Make the noise.
Okay. So, one strike. Ooh. Okay. Oh, my goodness. Ray Allen?
Let's see. No Ray Allen.
Oh, boy. That's two. I mean, I'm just trying to think of, like, shooters, but apparently they haven't made 10 or more. Let's go way back. Glenn Rice.
No Glenn Rice.
Dang it. All right.
Wow. Okay. So I'll give you a little help here.
Okay.
The other player was 12, Donyell Marshall.
Oh. Yeah, he was always good in the NBA Jam. I would always want to be him in NBA Jam.
Kyrie Irving, Darren Williams, and J.R. Smith, and Dennis Scott all have games with 11.
Kyrie Irving has 11? Dang.
11 threes in one game.
Wow.
And then as far as 10 goes, Kemba Walker, Wes Matthews, Trevor Ariza, Terrence Ross, Chandler Parsons, C.J. Miles, Joe Johnson, Mario Chalmers, Ty Lawson, McLeod, Joe Dumas, and Brian Shaw.
Brian Shaw, really?
So...
Interesting.
Kind of tricky, right? Some of these guys, they just got hot. They had huge games. Regardless, Klay Thompson tops them all. So, hell of a performance from him last night.
Yeah, I mean, also just the sheer effect of what the Warriors have done over the last week. Like, didn't Steph go for, like, 11 three-pointers a couple games ago or something like that? Or 10 three-pointers a couple games ago? And then him and KD combined for, like, 65 points. And then Klay Thompson went and did that. Like, they're just...
Yeah, the sixth best game on this list was October 24th of this year. So two of the six greatest three-point shooting performances in history have been in the last week by the Golden State Warriors. That's stupid.
That is a pretty it's a pretty good week.
Gosh.
Was there a week better than the Pac-12's week?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot better.
A lot better.
Oh, man. Okay. My next question. I pulled up a list of the favorite Halloween candies from each state. I know each state is a lot. So I'm just going to go through the first 10. How does that sound?
Okay.
And you're going to try and guess the state's favorite Halloween candy as reported by the USA Today.
Wait, do I have options? Like, is this multiple choice or just of all freaking candies?
Yeah, so what I'll do is they did the first, second, and third favorite of each state. I'll give you all three, and you have to pick which one is the first.
Okay, good call.
Okay. Okay, so let's start in God's country, Alabama. Is Alabama's favorite Halloween candy candy corn, Tootsie Pops, or Hershey's mini bars?
Tootsie Pops.
Incorrect. Alabama's favorite Halloween candy, according to the pounds sold, is candy corn.
I was going to say that because they're so old school and nobody likes candy corn.
Okay. Let's move on to Alaska. Is Alaska's favorite Halloween candy Twix, Blow Pops, or Milky Way?
Ice. Oh, I think one of those. Okay. Twix.
Correct. Alaska's favorite Halloween candy, Twix. 4,995 pounds of Twix were sold. Let's move to Arizona. I'm just going in alphabetical order. Is Arizona's favorite Halloween candy Snickers, Hot Tamales, or Hershey Kisses?
Well, it's definitely not Hot Tamales because you guys bake all year for 5 months. So there's no way you're eating something spicy for Halloween. What were the other two?
Snickers or Hershey Kisses?
Snickers.
Correct. 956,333 pounds of Snickers were sold in Arizona last year. Let's move on to Arkansas. Is Arkansas's favorite Halloween candy Jolly Ranchers, Hot Tamales, or Butterfinger?
Butterfinger.
Incorrect. It was Jolly Ranchers. 241,483 pounds of Jolly Ranchers were sold in the state of Arkansas.
Well, you know what's interesting about that is that none of those states had really any candy in common.
I know. It is kind of interesting, huh?
Like, even the top three were all very different from each other. Yeah. Like, a state liking candy corn that's very... I mean, Arkansas and Alabama are close to each other.
Yeah.
One of them is Jolly Ranchers. The other one is candy corn.
I know.
Like night and day.
I know. I know. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do California, and then I'm going to do to our two other most listened to states, which are Oregon and Washington, and then we'll move on.
All right.
So California. Is California's favorite Halloween candy Skittles, M&M's, or assorted saltwater taffy?
What?
I'm not sure why I said assorted. That sounds weird, like assorted. Assorted.
Assorted, right? I'm going to go Skittles.
Correct. Listen to this stat. 1,620,736 pounds of Skittles sold in the state of California.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a lot of friggin' Skittles.
Again, all three of those candies not mentioned until California.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So let's move on to now Oregon. Let me get down to them. Sorry. Wow. A lot of M&Ms. M and N names of states. Oregon, here we go. Okay, is Oregon's favorite Halloween candy Reese's Cups, M&Ms, or candy corn?
M&Ms.
Reese's Cups. Oregon must not be very candy heavy, because number one candy was Reese's Cups, obviously, but 92,495 pounds.
That's nothing.
They are foodies, so they probably make their own candy that's organic and, you know, all the it's good kind of stuff.
Bunch of hemp in it.
All right, last one. The state of Washington. Was Washington's favorite Halloween candy saltwater taffy, Tootsie Pops, or Skittles?
Tootsie Pops.
Incorrect. Saltwater taffy.
What?
Yeah, 220,000. Let me...
Does everybody in that state 60 plus? Like, I can't even remember getting that trick-or-treating ever growing up.
I'm not really sure, but apparently in Washington it's a big deal. This was published October 25th, 2018.
Wow, that was mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be honest, I didn't see that until I scrolled down, which it kind of threw me off when I was reading the question. I thought I might have given it away because I was so surprised. Oh, man. All right, you got any more for me?
That's it.
Okay.
That's all I got, man.
Well, good. Any other updates or input before we... Oh, World Series happened. Didn't even talk about that. Red Sox won. 4-1. My family's very happy, which is good.
Yeah, Dodgers. I'm an Angel fan, but I was rooting for the Dodgers the whole time. I think another disappointing World Series performance. Kershaw.
Yep.
0-2.
I know. Terrible.
For whatever reason, he just can't get out of the fifth inning.
I know. It's crazy.
Big time playoff game. I don't know what it is, but in baseball, as in any sport, you lose a couple championships. The management team starts looking around going, do we scrap this thing?
Right.
And I don't know if they can hold on for another run.
Yeah, but we'll see.
I don't watch, you know, obviously neither one of us watch baseball, otherwise we wouldn't talk about it. But I watched a lot of those baseball games in, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th inning. They're fun, man. It's intense.
Oh, yeah, I love playoff baseball for sure. I watched every single of the World Series games. But, yeah, it's just can't watch 182 of them. To be honest.
No. Jeez. So. Can't even watch 82 basketball
games. I know. Basketball. Yeah. It's a good point. It's a great point. All right. Well, have a great Halloween. Enjoy being a farmer. And enjoy getting Skittles, because that is the most popular candy in the state of California.
And one of my favorites. So I'm in the right place.
Hey, that's a good one. We didn't even do that. Let's do quickly favorite Halloween candy.
So for me, Starburst, number one.
Yeah.
I'm a Starburst guy. I'm actually a big Mamba fan as well.
Oh, I love Mambas.
Mambas are delicious,
right? Yeah, a lot of packaging. A lot of unraveling of the packaging, but it's okay. I mean, I still love them.
Yeah, not environmentally friendly by any means, right? Because you litter like an entire garbage bag worth getting just like one thing out of candy. But the plus side to that is if you eat half of it, you just save the other half.
That's true. And they come, they come in three, a big pack, and in the big pack, three separate packs, and then what, like five or six of in each of the mini packs? Yes. So
what about now and laters?
Not a real now and later guy.
Now and laters will rip your teeth right out of your mouth.
I'm a big flavored Tootsie Roll guy. Like the orange and the lime too. And the lemon. I'm big. But yeah, and I think there's new ones out that I really love. Well, Twix is hard to beat. Love Twix. But there's a new peanut butter Snickers. Really good. And I know that's not up your alley, but it's very, very good.
Interesting. No, yeah. I'm a fruity candy guy.
Yeah, Starburst, you are.
Starburst, Mambas, Skittles, Now and Laters.
Ooh, do you like Laffy Taffy? That'll tear your teeth up, too.
Yeah, I like Laffy Taffy.
Yeah.
I liked Airheads growing up a lot.
Yeah, too. Airheads, good. Airheads
especially
were good.
Especially the mystery flavor.
Ooh, did you, with the Airheads, did you shake it down and so then it, in the package so then it would like get rolled up all the way to the end? Did you ever do that?
No, but I'm going to try that now.
Yeah, so you just take the edge and you just like flap it, you know, and then it like starts to like roll itself up inside the package and you can do it all the way until you can just put one whole one in your mouth.
It's one big Airhead?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Who would have thought we would have had that discussion at 30 years old, but we did.
I'm gonna steal some kid's Airhead.
Yeah, do it.
Tomorrow, make that happen.
Anyways, all right. Well, have a good Halloween. We'll do the same damn thing next week.
All right, man, you too.
All right, see ya.